Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hey everybody.
Hello everyone. And all.
My name is David Bell.
I'm Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Nightmare Cinema.
Nightmare Cinema. So yeah.
Had nothing clever to say about that.
No, there wasn't. I couldn't do anything with that.
I was like, oh, maybe it sounds like cinnamon.
Nightmare Cinnamon.
Damn it.
Fuck. Yeah, right there.
We had it.
The curator of 100 years of nightmares, trapped in a silver screen that never forgets.
What are we gonna do?
Fight the damn devil.
So this is a horror anthology film that was in limited release this week and also on streaming.
That's correct.
So we decided to watch this instead of whatever bullshit's in theater this week.
Yeah, whatever bullshit.
Annabelle?
Annabelle? Yeah. Which was like, all right, well, we've
done enough sentient toys over the past week.
Yeah, let's shake things up. Let's give a fucking smaller horror movie a goddamn chance here, and let's talk about Nightmare Cinema.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, just before we get into it, that cinema is right down the street from where I live. Not right down the street, but it's 10 minutes from me, I realized.
Oh, yeah?
So that's kind of neat.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the framing of this, it's an anthology. It's people go to a cinema that shows them a movie starring themselves that's spooky.
Supposedly based on their worst nightmares.
Yeah. Tom, what did you think of this movie?
I thought it was mostly good, but like any anthology movie, it's pretty uneven.
Same.
I liked more of the vignettes than I disliked.
Yes. I agree. There was only like one that I was pretty fucking bored with.
Yes. Is it the Catholic school one?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was bored with that until the end when the priest starts chopping children apart with a broadsword.
Yeah, at that point, I was just like, no, you're trying to earn my love back, and
the rest of it sucks.
Yeah,
like that was a bad one.
Yeah, and I guess we can just go through each one, because it's the only thing about the framing device itself is that
it doesn't make any sense and it never connects in a meaningful way.
No, it does not. And it, you know, whatever. And that Mickey Rourke was clearly like a last minute get.
In the last shot when he's putting the reels up on the shelves, that is not Mickey Rourke.
Yeah. Well, all right, Mickey Rourke is the evil projectionist, and he's dressed like Mickey Rourke, and he acts like Mickey Rourke, and it's clearly because the person
he's good, he has the right presence for it, it's just
he's Mickey Rourke, he's great.
Right, he's used so little in this film.
Yeah, well, the framing device is directed by Mick Garris, who did the last one
on this list. Because I was going to guess, I actually saw Mick Garris like a week ago, he came to Collider.
How is he?
He seems fine. Okay. I didn't get to talk to him. He was doing the horror show that Collider does.
Sure.
But that last shot where he's putting the reels away and walks away, I'm pretty sure that's Mick Garris. Standing in for Mickey Rourke.
Mickey.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. And I also think Mick Garris is probably the director on this list who could... Well, Joe Dante as well. I was thinking, what director could actually like go to Mickey Rourke and be like, hey, be in this? Because Mick Garris, I guess he's not a huge director, but he did like the TV movie of The Stand miniseries.
Right. He's done a lot of Stephen King adaptations. Virtually every Stephen King miniseries he's done.
Yeah, he did The Shining. He's got a lot of The Shining miniseries. He's got a lot of Stephen King cred.
Desperation with Ron Perlman.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the two directors from this that stand out is him and Joe Dante. Joe Dante, obviously, because...
Oh, and, in terms of name recognition, yeah.
Yeah, and then
I was going to say, in terms of quality, it's those two. In my mind, it's more Joe Dante and David Slade.
I was about to say, David Slade which I feel like we're going to get to. I think we should go through each one, right, mm-hmm. in order. But David Slade is a standout in that he did the last, that interactive Choose Your Own Adventure,
Bandersnatch.
He's
done a few episodes of Black Mirror.
Yeah, and you can really tell.
It's a good segment. All right, we'll get to it.
We'll get to it. Yeah. And then the other two is...
One is...
The director Juan of the Dead, which I enjoy Juan of the Dead. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't seen it yet, but I liked his segment.
Yes, yes. He's the first segment. And then the last one is... Shit.
It's a Japanese filmmaker. He's the guy who made The Midnight Meat Train.
Got it. Okay. So everybody knows now.
I'm not going to try to pronounce his name because I'll just ruin it.
Yeah, that's fair. the first segment is called The Thing in the Woods.
Yes.
And it's the director of Juan of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts as like you're right in the middle of a slasher film.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on this? How did you like this?
I liked this one as it went on.
Yes.
In the beginning, I was like, oh, we might be in trouble. Because,
well, it was so straightforward at the beginning.
Right, it's so straightforward. The acting is bad, but in a way that as it went on, I was like, oh, this is intentional.
Yes. Having seen Juan of the Dead, I had a little bit of faith in it because I was like, okay, this is sort of the same like tongue-in-cheek tone mm-hmm. of Juan of the Dead.
Yeah, and the first body she falls on is very, very fake.
Yes. Well, that is definitely something I want to bring up.
So I was like, oh, we might be in trouble. But, yeah. But as the segment went on, I was like, oh, this is pretty good.
That was something I want to bring up about a lot of this is I can't tell if the director's got different budgets for each short.
I don't know.
Because, all right, the twist of this one is that it's this murderer killing all these teenagers, mm-hmm. and then it's revealed that the murderer, it's like a welder. And it's revealed that he's like their nerdy friend. And he's like, no, don't you remember what happened? And they cut back to the beginning of this story and a comet hit. And all the friends were infected by like brain controlling spiders.
Yeah.
Which is basically in this book is filled with spiders. It's basically that.
Yeah. They even crawl into their mouths.
Yeah. But the reason I point this out is the spiders look terrible.
Well,
they're very... The CGI, yeah, I mean, is terrible. Yeah,
it's serviceable they're
good
CGI.
Yeah, they're good design. But later, I feel like there's CGI that's way better.
Maybe.
It might be just how they shot it, though.
Yeah, it could be the shot and the lighting, because you see the spiders a lot in broad daylight.
Right, and the thing I'm thinking of, this way to egress, is black and white. And I wonder if it's black and white because of that, because he was like, I don't have a good enough budget.
I don't think so. I think it's related to the theme.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
But yeah, because I just think they spent it in different ways. Like in this one, the dead bodies look not great, but the gore effects are pretty good. So it's like, well.
That's true. When her head splits open and there's a spider inside, that was fucking gnarly.
The spider pushes her head apart and then pulls it back together.
Yeah.
That was pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah, it basically, this is very like John Carpenter-esque, gross. Basically, then the enemy becomes the spiders. When he explains it to his what you think is the final girl, her head splits open with a spider inside, and she yells, "Kill me! Do it! Kill me!" And so he has to kill her.
Yeah,
and then he's just fighting the spiders.
And then he gets possessed. We see him driving back to town, and then we see a spider crawling under his skin.
Yeah, it was fine. The one thing that occurred to me right away, because I was kind of hoping these would be scary.
Oh, none of them are scary.
Yes, and right away I was like, oh, okay, I see. This isn't going to scare me. This is just going to like maybe stress me out. That said, there is one of them that I did find kind of creepy, which we'll get to.
Okay.
But yeah, it was fine. It was
This is one that I liked liked more and more as it went on.
Yeah, and it's a good starter, for this anthology.
Yeah, it's a real fun kinetic one to get you into it.
Yeah,
because the movie's 2 hours long and there's five segments, so it's like they need to get you going from the get go.
Oh,
from
for
Jump
sure.
Street.
Yeah, they did. I always have this with anthologies where, like, watching the ABCs of Death. Oh my God, there was a point where I'm just looking at like looking at my watch or my phone, I guess, and wondering like, okay, what letter are we up to? How many more do we have to get through? Where it becomes like almost like a chore to get mm-hmm. through them all. This one, I think they paced it enough that it started losing me in the middle because of that one.
That goddamn Catholic school one.
Yeah, and then it gets back to it.
It ramps it back up, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah.
Okay.
The second one is Miraria.
Yeah, with Joe Dante as a director.
Dante.
This is not what I thought he would do as a director for this.
No, but it is very Joe Dante.
Yes. It's about a man and a woman. The woman thinks she decides to get plastic surgery.
Her fiance convinces her to get plastic surgery. She has a facial scar from a car accident when she was very little. And it's not like a terrible disfiguring scar.
No,
but
she looks fine.
She looks fine, but it is like it's the type of thing that you could see would like really bother somebody to have.
Yes, exactly. They did a good job with that because you're looking at her and you're like, you look fine. But I can see why you would be frustrated about this.
I thought this one and one other one were ones where I was genuinely got like the feeling of unease because it's like you can tell something is off right away and it's like I don't know what it is exactly, but this all feels wrong.
Yeah, there's also this like lack of control.
Yes.
Because basically she goes in, everything seems fine, she gets the surgery, and then she's sitting in a hospital bed, and of course that's where things get creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Because this plastic surgeon, like the office starts seeming weirder and weirder. They don't let her use the phone.
Her face is entirely wrapped up.
Yes. She sees
her
like,
fiance
oh, shit.
Arguing with the doctor, who is Richard Chamberlain, by the way.
Right.
arguing with the doctor. So clearly it seems like something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he's like, you're having a problem getting some air, so we're going to have to do another quick... It happens all the time. It's common. We're going to have to do... it happens all the time with nose procedure, so we're just going to have to do another quick little procedure to fix that.
Yeah.
And she's not having it.
No, and she tries to escape and find someone who doesn't have any eyes, I think.
No eyes or nose. Like, it's just... She looks like 80% of the blank because she has a mouth, but that's it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, then you know things are immediately wrong, and she tries to escape, but she ends up getting
subdued. Gets drugged.
Yeah,
she gets drugged by the doctor and his nurse.
And then she finally wakes up, and that's when she gets to look at her face, and she is just a monster, a weird monster.
With three tits.
With three tits. Mm-hmm. And then, that was the other thing. The guy keeps talking about how his mom got work.
Everyone does. The doctor does.
Right.
Her fiance does. Like how gorgeous and incredible his mom is. So of course you're like waiting to see his mom. And when she finally comes in, she's this like mutant monstrosity.
Right.
And they're all like, oh, she looks wonderful.
Yeah. That's it, right? That's how it ends?
Mm-hmm. It's really it's sort of like an inverted version of that Twilight Zone episode, Eye of the Beholder.
It's kind of a... I was about to say it's kind of a Twilight Zone-y situation because there's not much to it. It just taps into something that's creepy for all of us.
Yeah, not in control.
Yeah, not in control and having people like make these decisions for you that are hideous.
It's one of the two, if not the best directed segment, it's one of the two best directed segments.
Oh, yeah, because it's Joe Dante.
It's Joe Dante, yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
It was creepy, but it didn't stick with me in any profound way.
No, it's just a standard like
This
is like a spook show, you know.
Exactly.
It's effective while you're watching it cuz you get that sense of dread. You're like something is fucking weird here and I don't know what it is.
Right. Yeah. All right. I think that's my only thoughts on that one.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, the next one is, I'm going to call it Ma Shit.
Mash It.
Mash It.
Mash It.
This is the one, it's the director of The Midnight Meat Train.
I'll give it a shot. Ryuhei Kitamura.
Sounds better than I would have done. This was generally, it was shot in kind of that...
You can tell immediately it's a Japanese filmmaker.
Yeah. It's about a Catholic school where there's just a demon possession.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it's just so straightforward.
And possession movies bore the absolute shit out of me.
That was the only note I wrote about this that I wanted to remember is there's a part where they're talking about, like, a boy dies and then his corpse walks into the room. Uh-huh. And he does the thing where he's doing the backward fucking handstands.
Yeah, the contortionist walk that fucking every movie does.
Exactly. And all I could think is, how fucking boring is this? Why even put it in? Like, why would you see that anymore and go, yeah, we gotta have that happen? Because that moment could be scary. Because he's a dead boy. Because he speaks before, like, they see him. And if he was just standing in the doorway, like, that would have been creepy. You know,
or
if he's just like a regular, like acting, just moving like a regular person, if you're a corpse, is scary.
Just think of any other outside the box.
Yeah. But like, instead he does the and like the foot, you know, foot over the shoulder that they do in every single one.
Yeah. Like,
and
this
it's
is just
like, I'm so just, sick of this.
This is just me immediately off the top of my head because it's the priest and the nun. They're fucking. In his chambers, maybe have them hear the boy talk, and they look over at the desk, and like the Bible is suddenly made of human skin, and it's the boy's face,
sure.
And he's talking to him. That's just right off the top of my head. It's way better
really
than a goddamn spider walk that we've seen 100 times.
Yes, like I think that freaked me out maybe once.
Maybe it freaked me out one time in The Exorcist.
Oh yeah, The Exorcist down the stairs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Because it was so abrupt, and we had not seen that before.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just like, geez,
yeah,
Christ.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah. But even The Exorcist cut it out of the movie. That's a cut scene.
It's on the DVD and in the re-release.
Yeah. What I mean is they initially saw that and were like, eh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. That was kind of summed up this segment for me. It was a bunch of moments like that. Yeah. Where, like, it was trying to be creepy, but then the demons were, like, Evil Dead demons. They were, like, smiling, and,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, it ends in a bloody melee in the chapel, which is the only good part.
Right, and that's supposed to be over the top, but the rest of it
it's
leading
kind
up...
kind of over the top.
Yeah, the...
He chops a little boy's head in half.
No, it is.
Sword.
I'm saying it is over the top. It's supposed to be. It's just that before that, I was like, are you trying to make me creeped out? Are you trying to scare me? Because you're not doing that. And then it felt like they almost like gave up and were like, nah, let's just make it campy. Like at the end.
Well, have you seen Midnight Meat Train?
No.
It's pretty good. It's very, very dark and incredibly gory.
It's Vinnie Jones, right?
It's Vinnie Jones and Bradley Cooper.
Ooh.
And Ted Raimi has a fun cameo where he gets his eyes knocked out of his head with a meat mallet.
That sounds like a solid Ted Raimi cameo.
It's a solid Ted Raimi cameo.
Yeah.
It's worth watching. And you can see shades of it in here just in terms of the gore effects.
Right.
But, like, it didn't have the same... Like, the Midnight Meat Train was such a, you know, again, outside-of-the-box idea. It was like, it's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
And this is such a boring, overdone idea. This was a disappointing segment, and it was boring. Like,
yeah,
I was looking at my phone for most of this segment.
Yeah, it lost me completely. Yeah. That's why what I mean is when the end came, I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
you're trying, like, it's like, that's fine, but it's like, yeah, I've seen this. I saw this in Brain Dead. You know, I've seen this in movies before, the big gore fest, and I've seen it done better. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like, I'm not...
Hard to top Brain Dead.
Yes. It really is.
Hard to top that film.
The fucking lawnmower. I mean, yeah.
The lawnmower is all time great.
Yeah. So if you're watching this, I would recommend just skipping over this one, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not great.
No.
It's very dull.
Yeah, the next one, however...
Plus, if you skip over it, the movie's only 90 minutes.
That's true. Yeah, this feels like it could have... They really could have just done the four, made this 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, This Way to Egress, is... I want to say the best one.
Probably. This was the one where, like, before... Like, the segment right before, I had been on my phone, a lot of it. And then I looked up and saw Elizabeth Reeser, who is in a lot of Mike Flanagan stuff. I was like, oh, shit. And then she walks into the theater and sits down and the movie starts and immediately this segment is immediately so good that like I was like watching it very intensely the entire time. This is an excellent segment.
This feels like it's a Black Mirror episode that was shortened. It feels like this person, David Slade, pitched it as a Black Mirror. and they were like, nah. And so then, and then it became this, because it's all in black and white, and it's mm-hmm. a woman in a waiting room with her kids, and there's already this like hellish feeling to it, because she's like can't leave, and they're not, they're not like, the kids are being shitty and the doctor isn't seeing her, but she's the only one there,
mm-hmm. And she's very restless, and then shit starts to go bad, like it starts to get moldy, and like the receptionist face starts to change.
Yes, but very slowly. It took me a second.
Yeah, subtly. Yeah,
yeah.
Like everything starts to twist in on itself.
Yeah, everything starts slowly looking wrong.
And it's like, and she finally gets in to sit with the doctor, who is what's his name? Adam Godley.
He's the ears. He's got them ears.
Yeah. Adam Godley, yeah, he's on Umbrella Academy. Plays the talking monkey.
Oh,
and he looks normal, and he starts talking to her, and the questions he's asking her is like, the things are seeming different to you, so people look different and disfigured to you. It like,
right?
It's, and, it's such a slow burn rollout of what she's been going through, and at first, the way he's in, he's not really interrogating her. He's asking her questions as a like a therapist would. It seems like she has imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it seems like it's we're seeing what it's like to be in her head.
Yeah,
which would, that alone would be a really cool mm-hmm. idea. And then he starts talking about suicide.
He gets to suicide and then gets a phone call.
Yeah,
before she can answer. Like, we learn that her husband just left 2 days ago, and her husband is Patrick Wilson in a delightful voice-only cameo.
Oh, shit, it is.
Yeah, that was totally Patrick Wilson.
Wow, that's great.
Her husband left her, like, 2 days ago with the kids, and, like, she said her kids are behaving strangely and that they're acting, like, weirdly mature 1 second. Like, her kids actually took her to the therapist, and right. they're just being kids the rest of the time. And then he ends with the question, are you feeling suicidal? And before she can answer, he gets a phone call. It's like, oh, I have to take a meeting. Oh, I want you here tomorrow morning, and shoves her out of the office.
Yeah. And she's like, wait a second. Like, and then when she leaves, she can't find her kids, mm-hmm. and the world is just even worse and worse. And again,
it's getting worse, and people are looking worse, and you're starting to be able to understand them less and less.
Yes, they're becoming like monsters.
Like, they're speaking to her, but you can't make out the words.
Yeah, and they look like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like that style.
Yeah.
Like, monstrous faces. And the world is like, everything looks like dirty and bloody almost. Like, it looks more and more abandoned where she is.
Yeah, it looks like mold and slime and just like, it looks like a big sewer.
Yeah, and you don't know, again, at this point I was like, oh, this is like the head of someone who's having a psychological issue, and their kids are probably just in the bathroom or something, mm-hmm. but she can't find them. And then she pulls out a gun on one of the janitors who doesn't seem to care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's like, okay, I'm not sure what's happening.
Right, because she pulls the gun out of like an MRE bag. Like, she rips open a little silver package that would contain like an MRE or like,
it looks like
medicine
a prescription,
that needs to like medicine that needs to be refrigerated or something like that. So immediately you're questioning whether or not it really is a gun, because it looks weird and it has like a little mouth on the end of it almost.
Yeah, and it's like and you can't tell if this is like her, what she's going through, but like, what could have it been?
Right, and because the janitor's not reacting to it, you're like, well, it's clearly not a gun.
Like, yeah, it's like an inhaler or something. Like,
and when she gets to the elevators, and the receptionist is getting in, who is now completely disfigured and unintelligible.
Yeah,
she calls her husband, and this is the most interesting part that they never quite resolve. Is she's talking briefly to Patrick Wilson on the phone, and she's like, she's like in the middle of full blown meltdown freak out. So she can't quite express what's going on. She's just like, I need help. Like, we need to try to work this out. And he's like, cause she can't quite explain what's happening to her. And he's like, no, it's over. You can't do this. And you hear another woman be like, is that her in the background?
Oh yeah.
And then she says, but what about the children? And then right before the line goes dead, his voice distorts, but he says, what children?
Yeah. And then everybody's talking about how they can't find, how when she's like, have you seen my child? They're like the receptionist says it in the elevator. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I haven't seen any children.
Haven't seen any children, yeah. And then she finally points the gun at her own head, and that's when the janitor actually stops and looks at her.
Right.
Yep.
And that plays into what she discovers later.
Right.
Which is she goes down a hallway. Oh, you go. You go.
Oh. She goes down the hallway back up to the doctor's office and hears the doctor talking to her two kids, who it turns out are not her kids.
Yeah.
They're people or beings. Like, what's happened is she's, what we can glean from this conversation that
it's
the doctor's
having. It's a very cryptic conversation.
But what they're saying is she's come in from another reality, and they're not sure where she belongs, and they're trying to figure out where she belongs.
And since they can't, they think the easiest thing is for her to just kill herself.
Yeah.
Which I love, because it implies that in this world, death isn't necessarily that final, where they're like, this is just the best idea for her, is that she should shoot herself. That's her best option. You know? Like,
right.
And it opens up so many questions, because again, you could think like, well, maybe it is still her.
Well, it could be, because it ends with she kicks open the door, shoots the doctor in the head.
The doctor
gun.
Is also a monster when she opens. He's now a monster. The kids are the only ones who aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she drags them out, and they're like, where are we going? She's like, we're going home. And that's how it ends. So it could very well be that she could have descended from a wrong reality and found herself in an alternate dimension where she doesn't belong, or she could just be having a mental breakdown.
Exactly. And I do like, as an alternate dimension, this, like, it's scary and weird and different, but everybody's,
they're just
trying
normal.
To act normal.
Yeah. They're just regular people. Because you hear the doctor say, like, when he's talking to the two kids who are just actually other doctors, they
right,
say like, well,
so
one of them says, so we have to kill her. And he says, no, she has to kill herself. We're physicians, not murderers.
Yeah.
So even though they're in like this trippy alternate dimension, they're still like regular people.
Yeah. Like, or they still seem to have some sort of moral code. That's still different than ours, where they're like, yeah, we still have to drive this woman to kill herself. But it really, it makes more of a case for that there's something going on in her head. Because if you play it out, although, again, like you said with the gun, where it's like they don't seem to recognize it as a gun, but then she successfully shoots the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I can see it as a story of a woman having a breakdown, shooting her doctor and kidnapping her kids and thinking everybody's a monster that she has to protect them from. But they also, like, it doesn't explain a lot of the events in it. It's just so weird. It's very Black Mirror.
Yeah.
And it's
good.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's a very well shot one. Mm-hmm. And it's just really freaky and it's really creepy. And it's the only one of these that just gave me the willies.
Right. It's a good slow rollout.
Yeah.
Like they dole out information a little bit at a time. So you're still like right up until the end. You're like, I don't know what the fuck is happening, but I know it's not right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Similar to the Joe Dante one. And those two are the best in this movie, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This is probably the best.
Yeah, I think this is the best. I think this is the one everybody will like the most.
Mm-hmm.
This has about an 80% of Rotten Tomatoes, I think this is, or 88%, I think.
Oh, wow.
And I think this is what elevated it a lot.
For sure.
So I guess we're on to the final one.
Yeah. That's the
Which
Mick Garris one. It's called Dead.
Dead, starring a little kid who gets Batmaned. He gets Batmaned hard.
Does. He's at a piano recital. He gets into the car, his SUV afterward with his parents. His mom is Annabeth Gish.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. And then there's a mugger in the back seat who fucking executes all three of them.
Yeah. Well, he runs.
Yeah.
The mugger, they have an extended, like, where he shoots the father first,
mm-hmm.
and then the mother gets shot, and then he's running, and he gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wakes up in the hospital, and he sees his mother briefly, doesn't he, as he's waking up?
Yes, yeah.
And he finds out he almost died, and so he's been sixth-sensed. He sees dead people.
Yes, he sure does.
And his mother keeps trying to get him to die. Which was, I liked that idea.
His mother's trying to kill him.
Yeah, his mother keeps being like, that's it, just let go. And he meets...
Yeah, she's fucking trying to kill him so he'll be with her.
Right, and she also says, like, I can't leave unless you die first. Like, she's basically, it's like her unfinished business is like
she doesn't want to move
tethered
on
to the
him.
Yeah. And then there's another teenage girl in the hospital who also died and can see dead people.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother kills her?
Yep.
This is a weird one. And then it's all over the place. And then the mugger comes to the hospital because he thinks, oh, the kid saw me. And he's trying to finish the job. And it ends with the kid running around the hospital trying to get away from the mugger. And a hospital with very few security guards or...
Yeah, there's no one in this hospital.
That's
it's
one
crazy.
Of those, that's one of those horror tropes that I kind of hate at this point, which is this is the slow night shift at a hospital. And it's like people get hurt all the time.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, the hospital is always busy.
It is fully staffed.
Yeah, there is no empty hallways at a hospital.
They have rotating shifts, man. It's not that hard.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what happens. He hides in the morgue.
Yeah, with his friend's dead body.
Yep, that his mother killed.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how.
I don't know, man. We just see her legs lying in a pool of blood, and the doctor very cheesily says, guess she finished the job.
Right, because she was a suicide attempt.
Yeah. This is a very Stephen King story, so I can see why.
Yeah, it definitely had that.
Because it's Stephen King in terms of there's like... It's like a hat on a hat almost for horror.
Yeah, there's so much going on.
He's being haunted. He's in the dead zone, so he can see dead people. His ghost mom is trying to kill him, and then this fucking real life psychopath is also trying to.
Yeah, and it's like, come on, give the kid a fucking break.
Yeah,
I do like the ending with that, because what happens is that he basically has to fight off the psychopath, ends up killing the psychopath himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, he's being wheeled through the hospital and sees like his parents, who look kind of bummed. The girl who was his friend, who's a ghost. And at the end, the guy he killed steps in front of him and says like, sweet dreams.
Yep.
And I like the premise of the person you've killed, who wasn't a good person, is now like, yeah, I'm going to haunt the shit out of you.
Yeah,
here I
fuck
am.
Fuck you, kid.
Yeah.
Like, this guy was a straight up lunatic.
Yeah.
Like, he was going to steal the car, but ends up murdering an entire family and then going to the hospital to finish the job. It's like, Jesus, man.
Yeah, that guy, man. Things got really out of hand.
He really got locked in a spiral there.
Yeah. I love the idea of being hate haunted by someone who you kind of like know who they are. Like, in a lot of ghost movies, it's like, you know, mysterious woman and dressed in old timey clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of like being jump scared and being like, God damn it, Greg, stop it. We're never going to resolve this, Greg. Like, I know you. I've seen you. You're not scary. You're just jumping out at me a lot.
You're just
you
irritating
fucking asshole.
At this point.
Yeah. You asshole ghost. I want that to be. I want a horror movie about that.
So, yeah, like, it's twofold. Like, we already know his mom's not going to stop haunting him until he dies, because she doesn't want to move on until he's dead.
So he's all kinds of haunted at the end.
Yeah, he's, like, quadruple haunted.
Yeah. Are they going to hang out? Is, like, the mom going to hang out with the guy who killed the family after a while? Because, they're haunting the same kid.
I assume so.
Yeah. Eventually, they're going to have a big laugh about it, right? Mm-hmm. When they're at the pearly gates?
Once they're all dead, he's finally dead, whenever that happens.
Or, can you believe this is the guy who fucking killed us?
Yeah, right anyway. Here.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, we've worked things out since then. But yeah, this was a real, I don't know. This was, I guess, a good one to end on, but I think the issue, and we talked about this at the top, is that the framing device had nothing to really tie it all together?
Not really. Like, at the end, the kid snaps out of it, and Mickey Rourke's standing there, and he's like, what was that? He's like, I don't know. I'm just a projectionist here. This is what your thing is. And he's like, am I dead? He's like, well, no, you're not dead. They're all dead. He points to all the people who watched the previous segments, who I guess are all dead now.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, I want to leave. He's like, yeah, you think you can escape your future? Well, then run. Get the fuck out of here. He says, run, you little motherfucker.
He does, doesn't he?
Yep, and the kid runs out of the theater, but everybody else is trapped in there. And then we see him unspool the kid's film, lock it in a case next to everybody else's. that saw the cinema that day, and then he stores them on a shelf and shuts off the lights, and that's it.
Right. And I don't need...
I don't need much.
Well, VHS is a good example where there's no framing device there either that makes sense.
A little bit. It's a haunted tape.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The theme is the same, which is that at the end, it's still like tape related, at least the first one. And also, I remember those shorts escalating, at least almost in scale, as they went. They seem to be... Like, this doesn't seem like... It feels like a random assortment. Like, they based it... They definitely seem to compile it based on what they thought, like, would be the most compelling. And they did a good job with that. And overall, yeah, I like this movie. But, like, the framing device could have been... it could have been the Crypt Keeper introducing each one.
Yeah, or... I don't know, like another sentence or two from Mickey Rourke just to explain what the fuck this all is. That's all I needed. I don't need much.
Yeah, if he was like some demon that was trapping them all in their own personal hells, using the movie theater.
He suggests that he's trapped there and sort of forced to do this job to the second woman, because she comes upstairs looking for her fiancé into the projectionist booth, and that's where we first see him.
He's not in it much. He's in it maybe two or three scenes, right?
Right, yeah, there's not much Mickey Rourke here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's a cool idea for a framing device. I just wish it was a little more clear in how it's supposed to be connected.
Right.
Because he seems to suggest to the preacher, to the minister that all these people have sinned in some way, but that's never clear.
Right. And the stories, so it is supposed to be showing worst fears, which is weird.
Yeah. They're very specific fears.
Yeah, I was about to say, they're all very specific. And I know, like, what obviously happened is they contacted the filmmakers and was like, you want to do this? And they thought up their own ideas, and then they were just like, yeah, it's worst fears. But it's shaky. And I know, again, I know it's doesn't really need to be much, but they could have had, I don't know, they could have done something more creative with it. I liked, what is some of the good framing devices? Cat's Eye is all a cat, right? Witnessing shit?
Yeah, it's just him wandering from one place to another.
Like, that's a cool idea. It's just like shit a cat watches. And then at the end, he has to fight goblins. Mm-hmm. Little trolls.
I can't think of just one little troll.
You're right. VHS is a pretty good one for a found footage framing device, which is, hey, look at all this footage we found. Let's watch it.
Yeah, I like the framing device in the first two.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of if there's any others, anthologies that have good framing devices. I want to say the John Carpenter one there.
Oh, Body Bags?
Body Bags is just delightful. It's just John Carpenter in a morgue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just him as the Crypt Keeper.
And I think Peter Jackson is an ambulance driver in that one that brings in a dead body, I think.
Oh, that's excellent.
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, is a pretty good framing device.
I don't remember that one.
It's Debbie Harry is a witch who has locked a kid in her cellar and is preparing to cook him in the oven, and the kid is keeping himself... It's Odysseus. I think it's Odysseus. Where he's keeping himself alive by telling her stories.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's fun.
Campfire Tales has a pretty dumb one. Campfire Tales was more of a twist, I remember, because it's just people telling campfire tales.
Yeah.
And then the twist at the end is they all died in a car accident that's like down the road from them, which means that they got in a car accident, died, and their ghosts got just distracted by a campfire.
Their ghosts sat down to roast some marshmallows and tell some spook stories.
Right. Which is also, what is it? Tales from the Hood? Is that the one?
That's the one where they're dead as well, I think. I think so. I remember it's, what's his name? Clarence Williams III?
Yeah.
The guy from the Mod Squad?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that one, he's like the Grim Reaper or something. Like, I think he's...
Something like that, yeah.
That seems to be a lot of these, which is just...
Yeah, you're dead.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Yeah, they're in hell, and he transforms into Satan.
Oh, word. That's
pretty
sweet.
So Satan's just telling them cool Satan stories.
I haven't seen that movie in a while, but I remember it being pretty sweet.
Yeah.
In particular, the one with Corbin Burnson as a racist on an old plantation home.
Yeah, that sounds delightful.
Getting attacked by tiny dolls.
Yeah. Okay. I got to watch that again.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I think, yeah, and I'm just trying to see how this stacks up to other anthologies.
This is one of the better ones I've seen recently.
Yes, definitely recently. The other one I can think of is, what was it called? Just Scary Stories or Ghost Stories?
That was a big letdown.
It was, because I think we talked about it somewhere, but like, yeah, they just kept cutting them short, and then mm-hmm. The twist was so over the top and insane.
Yeah, it was real dumb.
Yeah, that was a real shame. I'm trying to think of other anthologies I've seen lately. This is definitely worth watching. If you like horror anthologies,
yeah.
If you liked VHS, if this is something that attracts you, or if you like horror movies in general and don't even have much of a background with anthologies, this would be a good entrance into the anthology genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they are hit or miss. Like I said, ABCs of Death is one that I'm like, avoid that. That was...
Yeah.
That was really fucking tedious at times, because it was only as good as whatever short you were watching, but mm-hmm. there were so many shorts that it was just...
However many letters of the alphabet there are, 26?
Yeah, I'm not going to count them.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are better ones, but this is pretty decent.
What would you say is the best anthology movie?
Man...
That's a hard one, right? I'm Googling this as we talk.
My knee-jerk response is VHS 2, just because it has that fantastic Gareth Evans segment in it.
Also...
It's kind of the only good one in it.
Yeah, I need to see Holidays. I heard Holidays was fun.
Oh, wait, no. Is VHS 2 the one that also has the Adam Wingard one in it, with the guy that has the cybernetic eye that lets him see ghosts?
I think so, yeah.
The guy is literally Adam Wingard.
Like, yes, it is.
He plays the guy.
yeah, I think
VHS 2 is pretty good. The first two VHSs are pretty good.
Yeah, they are really good. It's weird because they're so recent, so I feel like something older.
I mentioned Tales from the Dark Side, which is not good. The framing device is really great, though, and there's one fucking the mummy one that has fucking Christian Slater, Steve Buscemi, and Julianne Moore in it.
Is that Tales from the Dark Side?
It's Tales from the Dark Side, yeah.
Okay, I thought that was Creepshow. I gotta watch Creepshow again.
Oh, Creepshow!
Yeah, Creepshow is Creepshow just this framing device? Is it a theater?
No, it's a comic.
Got that. Oh, okay.
It's a comic book, yeah. Because it was taken from like the old EC comics. The first Creepshow is pretty fucking good.
Yeah. Yeah, Creepshow, I think, has to be it, right? Because it's fucking
Maybe.
Creepshow.
And yeah, it's George Romero and Stephen King.
I have to watch it again, though. But that's
The second... Yeah. Creepshow 2 has, like, one good segment, and the rest of it's crap.
Yeah.
The one good segment being the one that Stephen King wrote.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The Raft.
I feel like I've seen that.
It's the one where they're on a raft in the middle of a lake, and there's, like, this blob in the lake.
Oh! It was based off a short, wasn't it?
Maybe.
Yeah, where it, like, kills them. The blob is, like, sucking them into...
Oh, it dissolves them. Yeah.
Yeah. I do enjoy Cat's Eye as well, the more I think about
Cat's Eye is pretty dope, yeah.
The ledge one, where the guy is just going over around the ledge, is
all
such
three,
a cool,
all
freaky
three of
idea.
All three are based on Stephen King stories, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The ledge is definitely one.
Yeah,
Quitters
I think that's
Inc.
the
with
one...
James Woods.
Yeah, that's the one that fucking sticks with me the most. Like, that's one where, like, I saw it as a kid, and then a lot of my life, I was like, I have this, like, memory of these things, and I don't remember what it's from.
Yeah, Cat's Eye is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, you know what's technically an anthology that I really like? It's older, but The Illustrated Man is an anthology. That's a great framing device, too.
I haven't seen
it. Have you seen that? It's based off, I think, a book. It's Rod Steiger as The Illustrated Man. It's a guy who meets up. He's like a train hopping hobo type, I think. And he meets up with this man who's covered in tattoos. Mm-hmm. And he has this little yappy dog that's just delightful that he keeps in a sack. And they like camp together. And he looks at the guy is trying to find and kill the person who gave him that tattoos. Because they're cursed, and the other guy starts like looking at the tattoos, and every tattoo gives him a vision, and the vision is a story.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of them have to do with like the future, and like are really fucking. They're like sci-fi horror. Like it's a little dated, but it's some freaky shit. The last one I like is really good. It's about like a society that's faced with the end of the world, and it's like their last day on Earth. There's some really good ones. A lot of them are just like predictions. They're like futuristic. And since this was made in the 70s, they're like delightful futuristic where it's the 70s approximation. Mm-hmm. There's one where it's just guys on a planet that's like raining and they're just trying to get through this planet and the rain is driving them crazy. So yeah, that's a really fun one. And I like that framing device of just tattoos all over someone's body that's slowly driving someone else crazy. I recommend that one to people.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Sure. Yeah, I think sure. I'm trying to like think of top five anthologies and stuff like that. I like it's an interesting genre.
Yeah.
I want to do like an anthology of like anthologies where you do like a festival.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
Why the fuck not? That's within our power.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that's a sode.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one of them sodes.
That's a sode. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to check out Nightmare Cinema, it's on Amazon. You can rent it.
Yeah, I think check it out instead of Annabelle, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Both of them have Patrick Wilson in it.
Yeah, and I'm sure Annabelle's fine, but... yeah, maybe just watch them both. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, who gives a shit? I don't care.
Yeah. That's true. Do what you want. It's your life. Yeah,
be you. You live your best life.
Yeah.
YOLO.
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 Dave, what do we got going on?
We got a Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. You can check out our exclusive podcasts, Fox Mulder is a Maniac, and Tom and Jeff Watch Batman. Mm-hmm. We also have a tier where you can watch movies with us every Friday. Yep. There's even a tier where you can request your own episodes of We Just Watched, where we have to watch a movie that you tell us to watch, and then we do an episode on it. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on over there.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of content.
Yeah.
A hot con.
Shoving that hot con right in you.
Shoving that hot con. If you don't, if things are tight or you don't really feel like, you know, throwing us any dollars, you can always leave us a review wherever you're listening to this. That helps. And we also got a store at tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed. We got some shirts and posters and junk, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Probably stickers. Whatever you want to get. You know how that it's yeah. like yeah, you just get the design whenever you want. It's one of them places.
Yeah. But then if you're tight, you can still get our hot con here.
Mm-hmm. Our hot steamy piping hot con.
Yeah, it'll burn ya.
Yeah. Real burny.
Hmm.
Hmm.